And good morning, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome live out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Billion in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Happy Thursday to you out there. It is January 6th. And on the program today, I'm going to give you the lay of the land. We'll jump right in. Lots to talk about. Jake Hinman is with us in just a second. He's awaiting in the green room on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association. We'll talk with him about his and the association's view on the source of income protection ordinance being discussed at the Tucson City Council. We've covered it a bit on this show, and we'll hear from someone who is speaking about it in terms of representing the housing industry on the private sector side. Alma Hernandez will be with us. She's been a state legislator here in Southern Arizona in the up until recently Legislative District 3 here in Southern Arizona. We'll get a forecast of what's going on at the state legislature and maybe what's next for Alma Hernandez. That and more on the show today. But let's go ahead and jump right in. 520-790-2040 is the number that Jake is using to be with us this morning. It's the number you can use to join the conversation as well. Jake Hinman, on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association, good morning to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
Absolutely. So first, give us the 60-second version of what is the Arizona Multi-Housing Association. Who do you represent? What do you aim to do? What's the purpose of the association?
Sure, you bet. So the Arizona Multi-Housing Association is the statewide trade association for the apartment and rental housing industry. It represents roughly about 2,000 member companies across the state, and about 320,000 rental units, individual rental units. And these are rental owners that are some of the large corporate apartment community owners and also some of the small mom-and-pop owners, again, throughout the state. And the objective is simply to try to level the playing field for rental operators and then simply protect them in sort of the regulatory and legal spaces throughout the state.
Gotcha. Jake Hinman, we've covered on this show last week the source of income protection ordinance that the city of Tucson here in Southern Arizona is discussing, and we expect in an upcoming meeting that to be voted on. But give us your summary from your seat of what is being discussed here by Tucson's mayor and council. We'll start there. Give us a summary.
Sure, you bet. And mind you, the details are fairly scant because there hasn't been any actual language of any ordinance released. This is something that's sort of been conceptually discussed at a fairly high level in a couple of work sessions. But I'll give you at least my understanding of the workings up to date. So generally, this idea of a source of income protection is aimed at trying to require all rental property owners to accept housing choice vouchers, more commonly referred to as Section 8 vouchers. The Section 8 program is a federal program that's been around for many, many years. Since its inception, it's always been a voluntary program. And the way the program generally works is a renter who is looking for housing but needs some help in attaining housing asks for or requests a voucher, in this case, from the city of Tucson. The voucher covers typically 70% of the rent, and then the renter is on the hook for the remaining 30% of the rental rate. Again, it's always been a voluntary program, but under this ordinance, it would now be required, meaning every single property owner in the city of Tucson, whether they're a large apartment owner or just a mom and pop who owns one rental unit, would be required to accept the Section 8 voucher. And the challenge is when you accept these vouchers, you're then accepting a whole slew of regulation, whether it's paperwork, dealing with inspections from the city, but most importantly, simply waiting to be paid from the city of Tucson. And we have examples going years back where it's taken the city 6+ months to pay rental property owners. And we can get into the details about the city's sort of history running the program if you'd like. But that's generally what the ordinance would do.
Gotcha. Yeah, certainly we have two segments today with Jake Hinman here with us on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association. I do want to talk about kind of the impacts and source of income protection as a whole. I personally think it's important, what is the better way that the Arizona Multi-Housing Association would like to see the same impact created? What happens next, Jake? You mentioned that there's been a study session on this, I think instigated by our Ward 6 council member, Steve Kozacik. Where does this go from here, and what's kind of the timeline for continued conversation?
Sure. It's my understanding that it will be discussed again, possibly adopted sometime in January. But again, the details have been relatively scant. So we're just sort of reacting on what we heard in the last work session. But let me go back to, I think, sort of your premise about, you know, what are the alternative solutions to source of income? We're under the impression that the city, and frankly the state right now, is vastly undersupplied in housing.
Correct.
And that's the result of perhaps many years, if not decades, of frankly poor planning and not allowing the market to respond to the growing demand. I just picked up or saw a news article just yesterday saying for every vacant unit, rental unit, there are 20 renters applying for it.
Jeez.
To me, that suggests that we are vastly undersupplied. I mean, we're at historic levels of occupancy rates, meaning there is next to nothing when it comes to vacant rental units. I mean, you can just simply look at Zillow, look at any of these platforms, and realize there's just not a lot of inventory out there. So to me, the best way to address this issue is to build more homes and make the market more competitive. To me, a source of income protection is really window dressing, because while you may be able to find folks with vouchers a place to live a little bit easier, it just simply bumps somebody else potentially out of that home. So we just need to build more homes is sort of the simplest and cleanest way out of this hole.
Jake, I may want to circle back to this in the second segment, but while we're on the topic, is it your impression, again, on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association, is it your impression that if, this is the usual laundry list, regulations were less, zoning was more allowing for denser development, the permitting process was faster, is it your impression that the builders in Arizona would build if it was easier and there were some incentives to kind of meet the cost of labor and supply and materials? Would the builders build, Jay? Because I've heard yes and I've heard no, to be quite honest. Would the builders build?
I would emphatically say yes. If I would say zoning presents the initial barrier and probably the most significant barrier in addressing our housing deficit. You simply have to go to a zoning hearing at a council meeting, a supervisor meeting, to understand how contentious these rezoning applications are. Somebody wants to build, say, a new multifamily apartment community, and typically that invites many, many people showing up at a council chamber saying that, you know, it's going to increase whatever it is, increase traffic, increase noise, et cetera. And oftentimes those neighbors win. And so certainly you have the zoning obstacles, you have just how long it takes to simply get through the process from a permitting standpoint. So I would say yes, if you would remove some of these barriers and allow the market to respond, I think you would have a lot of folks willing to build. And by the way, this is a conversation that is now really being recognized both at the federal level and the state level. You have presidents talking about zoning restrictions as being the number one obstacle in this housing crisis. You have our state leaders really taking a close look at local zoning laws as being the number one contributor to this housing crunch. So it's something that I really think is starting to get the attention of a diverse group of stakeholders that traditionally maybe not, they don't necessarily agree on too many things, but they agree on this issue. Mm.
Yeah, Jake, I have to agree with you. Separate from the source of income protection conversation, the brass tacks, Jake, just to affirm what you said, you can have all the money in the world to run at this problem. You can have all the resources in the bank. If you don't have the political will, either on the dais or in the neighborhood, and to make zoning changes and to make smart housing policy that makes it easier to build, you have nothing. It really just comes to that. You cannot spend your way out of this problem unless there is political will to shift zoning policy in the direction it needs to go. And, Jake, I've had the Arizona Director of Housing, Arizona Department of Housing Director Tom Simplot on a number of times, and it used to annoy me that he would bang that drum every single time. But he's right. It comes down to the local level. This is an enormously local issue and challenge. Jake Hinman is with us on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association. We have a second segment with Jake here on the other side of a short break. I want to talk about what are the impacts, what are the estimated impacts of a source of income protection ordinance? Again, we'll circle back on what is the better way to make sure that people who need help finding housing can find housing where they need it, for what they can afford. I think it's important. How we get there is the policy discussion we're having today. We'll be back with Jake in just a minute on Tipping Point, 1030 The Voice.
Listen to the live stream and find podcasts of your favorite shows at kvoi.com.
In 2021, FC Tucson was just getting started. We're building something special that all of Tucson can be proud of. Don't miss FC Tucson in action in 2022. Secure your season tickets now at fctucson.com or call 520-600-3095 and download the FC Tucson app in the App Store or Google Play to get updates on MLS preseason as FC Tucson welcomes the biggest teams in U.S. soccer in January and February.
Tucson, your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to present the Patrick Martinez Look What You Created exhibition. In his first solo museum exhibition in the American Southwest, Los Angeles-based artist Patrick Martinez explores sites of personal, civic, and cultural loss sustained over recent years in America. Opening just this month through April 24th, you can go see it in the Kasser Family Wing of Latin American Art. TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to get your tickets now. Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson. Located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater, Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love?
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you live out of the Common Workspace Studios. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We're with Jake Hinman this morning on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association, talking about the source of income protection ordinance being discussed by the Tucson mayor and council here in the city of Tucson. And we talked about what that looks like in at least draft form in the last segment. Jake, I have a couple questions for you as we wrap up. One is, what are the impacts of this? And I will tell you that I've talked to people, Republicans, Democrats, developers, housing advocates, and everybody has some concerns about this, including the fact that some small landlords may just take their properties off the market or not develop. Some that are concerned that landlords will raise their rents in a healthy rental market high enough to avoid the 40% of income threshold that the federal government allows a Section 8 voucher holder to pay up to. And there's less money from the city to then put into the pot to help these homeowners or these potential tenants. Anything you would add to that list? What are the potential impacts of a source of income protection ordinance in the current Tucson ecosystem?
Well, let me take a kind of a quick step back and just give you some context on this issue, especially with the city of Tucson. So, a number of years ago, we met with the city of Tucson to express our concerns at the time that the program was run quite poorly. Again, at the top of your show, I mentioned that we had examples of owners who hadn't been paid in over 6 months, who were voluntarily participating in this program, but because the city was so backlogged, it took 6 months to be paid. And that presents a number of challenges for especially a mom and pop owner. Those owners still have mortgages to pay. They still have their insurance and property taxes that are still due every month. And yet the city was taking 6 months to simply write the check to them. You know, imagine your employer saying, I promise I'll pay you, but it may be 6 months from now. From a cash flow perspective, It presents a number of issues. At the time, we mentioned to the city that this lag was going to cause owners to bail from the program, to leave the program, because they just simply couldn't wait that long. And I can tell you that the city didn't take our warnings, I would say, seriously at the time. And now here we are a few years later, and owners indeed left the program because of the way the program was mismanaged. So now we're in a situation where the city wants to force these same owners into the program after they clearly failed at running the program for so many years. But the concern really is that if you continue to place this burden on especially small mom and pop owners, that especially in this sort of historic real estate market, they're going to leave. And you know what? They're going to throw their hands up and say, you know what? I can't deal with this, and I'm going to sell my property. And we've seen this pattern in the last couple of years, especially in light of the federal eviction moratorium. We had owners exit the market completely. And again, when you and I talk about supply issues, the last thing we need right now is for owners, especially our small mom and pops, to exit the market and sell their property to folks looking to purchase their new home. So that's the concern that we have, is what is this going to do to our supply side? And then, of course, you're going to have the owners who, if they are forced onto this program, they're going to hedge their risk. And usually what that means is rental rates tend to increase. As owners absorb more risk, that risk is passed on to renters in the form of a rent increase. So I think there are some very, very real, probably unintended consequences in an ordinance like this. And by the way, I should also mention, there are very serious legal questions. We don't frankly believe the city even has the legal authority to pass this. But, you know, for us, it's really more the practical questions that we're trying to really sort through.
Jake, real quick follow-up, and I have one last question to fit in here. The City of Tucson's Department of Housing and Community Development, and I work with a number of them quite a lot in other community themes, and I have a deep respect for many of the folks who are there and their intent, have said, hey, we've solved that problem. If they sat down with you, Jake, today, they would say, yep, it was a past issue, but we are faster, leaner, more streamlined. We can make sure those 3 to 6 month delays don't happen. Jake Hinman, are you buying that?
Let's just say I'm crossing my fingers. I hope it's true, but I suppose the proof is always in the pudding.
Jake Hinman is with us on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association. Look, in a rental and housing market, Jake, where people are getting priced out. Jake, the numbers in Tucson are enormously astounding. Income has increased by 4% since 2019, rental rates by 25%. Only 2% of Tucson's housing stock today was built in the last decade. We've got a lot of people who are simply not making enough, who need housing, and our market is pricing them out. I think a healthy economy means that people who need to live in this community can, where they are able and where they need to be. So I think source of income protection, whatever that looks like, is important. Is there a better way in your mind to make it happen than this ordinance?
Yeah, to us, the best way to solve this housing crisis is to build more homes. And again, that can happen relatively quickly if we remove these barriers, whether it be zoning, whether it be long permitting processes. You will see the market respond rather quickly. To your point, we are building at record lows, even while we're seeing record migration into the state. You know, folks fleeing the San Franciscos or you know, some of these coastal cities now that they can zoom into work, and we're seeing folks move into our state, and that is causing longtime Tucsonans or longtime Arizonans to be priced out, because it's, you know, even these high rates, rental rates for us, or high for sale prices for us here in the state, are relatively low from folks fleeing the coastal cities. So the short answer is we need to build more homes in a rapid fashion.
Jake Hinman has been with us on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association. You answered all the questions on my list, Jake. Any final words before we let you go?
No, thanks for having me. And I would just say, you know, I like I said a little earlier on, this is something that's gaining the attention of various leaders on various levels of government. So I think we're going to start to really see some interesting ideas to address this housing supply issue. So I would just say stay tuned.
Yep, Jake, I agree with you. I think we are in a housing crisis. The state now calls it a housing crisis. We are today where we thought we were a few years ago. If we didn't giddy up and go on this issue, we didn't giddy up and go. And so here we are. But this is the path of the American city, unfortunately. And I think how we solve it is as important as solving it in the first place. Jake, appreciate you coming on again on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association. And we'll definitely reach out and stay in touch as this thing evolves.
Thank you much. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jake. When we come back from bottom of the hour news and sponsor messages, Alma Hernandez is going to be with us, representative for Legislative District 3 here in Southern Arizona. We'll forecast what, of course, will be a calm, cool, and productive state legislative session here. Starts next week, by the way, next Monday, on the other side of this break. 10:30, The Voice. Tipping Point returns in just a minute.
In 2021, FC Tucson was just getting started. We're building something special that all of Tucson can be proud of. Don't miss FC Tucson in action in 2022. Secure your season tickets now at fctucson.com or call 520-600-3095 and download the FC Tucson app in the App Store or Google Play to get updates on MLS preseason as FC Tucson welcomes the biggest teams in U.S. soccer in January and February.
Tucson, your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to present the Patrick Martinez Look What You Created exhibition. In his first solo museum exhibition in the American Southwest, Los Angeles-based artist Patrick Martinez explores sites of personal, civic, and cultural loss sustained over recent years in America. Opening just this month through April 24th, you can go see it in the Kasser Family Wing of Latin American Art. TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to get your tickets now.
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
And And good morning to you, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome live out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point, with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. We just said goodbye to our top of the hour guest, Jake Hinman, on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association, talking about the housing crisis in Arizona, and specifically the city of Tucson's proposed ordinance, at least in study session, to create source of income protection as an ordinance, as a rule in the city of Tucson. We talked about the impacts of that, and what is the best way to make housing more affordable locally and around the state. Alma Hernandez is now with us on the line. Southern Arizona state legislator, has been for a couple of terms now. Here ahead of the legislative session starting on January 10th, Monday, is Alma Hernandez. Alma, good to be with you this morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me join you.
Absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to talking about the cool, calm, collected, and productive legislative session that is ahead of you guys over the next few months. But you've been representing Legislative District 3, if I've got my facts straight. And it's no longer LD3, correct, Alma? All those numbers have shifted here on the other side of redistricting. So what are you representing now? What is the number and where are you, Alma Hernandez?
We are now the new LD20 here in Southern Arizona. As I'm sure many of those who are listening in today know, that redistricting just happened. It happens every 10 years. And we do rearranging of numbers and district names. So now I'm the new LD20, currently LD3. And it basically encompasses all of anything going Campbell Speedway going west, the Pascua-Yaqui Reservation, parts of South Tucson, and the district ends at Camino de la Sierra right before Marana. So we cover a pretty significant chunk of Southern Arizona, and now it's grown just a bit. It goes a little more east, so now we cover a little more area outside of the Campbell area. So very much looking forward to it. I'm about to go in on Monday for my third term, going in on my fourth year, and I'm really excited. You know, I was placed on a new committee. I'm currently on the Health and Human Services Committee. I'm the ranking Democrat of Ethics, and now I am being placed on the Government and Elections Committee, which I'm sure you probably know is going to be a very interesting committee this upcoming session. With everything that's gone on politically, as you can imagine, that is going to be a very interesting committee to be on, and I'm glad to be on it. But I was on the Criminal Justice Reform Committee that has now basically been shut down. So they closed that committee down and they added members to other committees.
Well, I agree with you, Alma. I think that's going to be a hot topic this legislative session. I want to spend a little bit of time on that with you, kind of figuring out what that looks like. But in a normal year, not that there really ever is one, but in a normal year, what priorities would you like to walk into the state legislature with on behalf of Southern Arizona and your district? And what are your priorities for us here down in Southern Arizona?
Yeah, of course. So the priorities, whether it's here in Southern Arizona or in Santa Cruz County or up in Northern Arizona, I think most of the people in our communities, they don't care about all the partisan politics. They don't really, get into any of that. An average voter really is not paying attention to the fights we're having at the Capitol or in Congress. They want to know what we're actually doing to deliver. So I think most of my constituents also care about a lot of the same issues, which is creating more jobs, making sure that they have opportunities here so that they can raise a family. So for me, it's really important that when I'm at the Capitol, there are less Southern Arizona representatives than we do when we're talking about the rest of Arizona. So it's really important for me to be an advocate for my community at the Capitol and remind my colleagues that not everything is about Phoenix or Phoenix Central. We have a really significant part of Southern Arizona that many times, they want to leave out of the conversation or out of the picture because they feel that their communities are priorities. But that is why, I've been very willing to work with both sides. I always work with everyone. I chair one of the bipartisan caucuses that we have. So for me, it's really important to work with people and ensure that the needs of my community are being met, especially when we're advocating at the Capitol. So whether it's creating more job opportunities, ensuring that people have quality and affordable healthcare options here in Southern Arizona, and really education is a big priority as well, because we can't expect to have good companies come and move here. We can't expect to fill the workforce that is needed if we're not educating the future generation. So those are the issues that are very important to me. On top of all of those, I think a really important one is criminal justice reform. I am running a bill actually this year to end cash bail. I'm working with the NAACP and other stakeholders, because I think that it's important when we're talking about whether it's funding for state and where our money goes, that we're really looking at issues that are affecting our communities that are low income. And that is one of them when we're incarcerating people for nonviolent drug offenses or nonviolent offenses, and we're not really investing in educating or offering opportunities for those folks. That is where we're seeing a lot of the issues. So I'm really looking forward to this session. It's going to be really interesting. I believe we have 12 new members that will be joining us on Monday. I would hope, and I'm always very optimistic that it's going to be, something that we're all going to be able to work together, hopefully, and get things done. But it's also election year, and I think most of us know that it's going to be an interesting type of situation that we're going into with so many new members. We had a pretty high turnover in the last few weeks here, so I'm hoping for the best. I do know that everyone is coming in with issues that they care about the most that are important to them in their communities. So I'm really hoping that we can find consensus and really just work together and ensure that we're delivering for our districts.
Yeah, Alma, I'm usually with you on that optimism train. The realist in me thinks that this legislative session is going to be a mess. And I think it's going to be a mess because it's an election year. I think it's going to be a mess because of a continuation of a lot of topics from the last session, and the fact that in many ways, in many regards, even the freshmen legislators from last year are now having a large degree of seniority because there's so much turnover. And I think there's so much expertise. I mean, Alma, you're now kind of the senior leadership in many ways of the state legislature, because there's been so much turnover. We haven't seen this much turnover since there was some scandals in the 90s. I mean, it's just insane. So I think this is a huge transition year, Alma. It doesn't seem to me to be a year where there's going to be a lot of happy consensus and handholding, unfortunately, because I'm also with you. I think there used to be a time in Arizona where we talked jobs, healthcare, education, and criminal justice, and it's been a long time since we focused on the meat and potatoes. So as a segue there, Alma, you listed the themes you'd like to be talking about. What do you think are going to be the themes that take up the most airtime at the state legislature this session?
Yeah, well, we're here, again, we still haven't seen every bill that is going to come to the legislature. As you probably know, we usually have over 1,000 that are submitted, and not all of them get hearings, not all of them get voted on. But I do know that, I'm hearing that there are some members that will be introducing some pretty outrageous things, and everyone's entitled to drop whatever legislation they want. But I hope, my hope is that we have people in leadership on both sides that know that they know what work we should be doing. And I'm hoping that because it is election year, and I know that there is a lot of folks who feel like it's election year, it's going to be a complete mess. We're going to walk into a circus. Me being the person that usually works with just about everyone, I am hoping that even though we will see some pretty interesting legislation be introduced, it doesn't mean that they're going to get very far. You have to remember, a lot of people like to drop pieces of legislation to make statements. And I think that's what we're going to see a lot of this session, especially with a lot of turnover. We have a lot of new members, a lot of new ideas. A lot of these individuals have never been in office or really run a campaign. It's the first time, being in this sphere. So I know we're going to see some pretty interesting pieces of legislation, but it doesn't mean necessarily that they're going to make it anywhere, right? It's going to be a lot of of, I think, you know, headlines. We're going to see a lot of headlines, mainly around elections, I'm sure. I'm hearing that we're going to see some stuff on reproductive rights. So, you know, it's the same that we see every year, nothing new, but it's election season. So we're going to see a lot of statement bills be dropped. But I'm really, again, I'm really hoping that the chairs of the committees and those who are in current leadership, senior members, you know, they don't want, no one wants to be there till June this year. I think that's pretty clear. We don't, no right. one wants to be there till June. Primary elections are in August.
Right.
This is why I feel, yes, we'll see some crazy, sometimes really interesting pieces be dropped, but it doesn't mean they're going to go anywhere. I'm just trying to stay positive because I do know that there are many senior members who understand this and who have been around for more than one election now, who know that, you know, the worst thing we could do is all of us stay there fighting up until July. We don't want to do that. So I'm hoping that, yes, that although we'll see a lot of these bills, whether it's around elections, reproductive rights, criminal justice reform, whatever you name it, they may make headlines, but it doesn't mean that they're going to, you know, make it all the way through or to the governor's desk. So I'm staying hopeful again. I work with people across the aisle as much as possible. Even if we don't agree on every issue, I try to find issues that we could agree on. And, you know, I think that's how I've been able to get some bills to the governor's desk and have been able to get some things done. So for me, it's important to try to stay positive. You know, we start on Monday. Things will, again, a lot of new members, a lot of learning as you go for a lot of these folks. So, you know, I'm hoping that they will be open to working with us and making sure that we don't stay there until the end of June. I don't think anyone wants to be there that long, especially this session.
I completely agree with that, Alma. I think that piece of election year is going to make things hopefully a little bit more efficient. Part two of our conversation with Alma Hernandez, Legislative District 3 representative in the state legislature. It will be shortly LD20 now after redistricting here in southern Arizona. We'll be back for part two of our conversation with Alma here on Tipping Point 1030 The Voice right after this.
The next generation of talk, Tipping Point, with Zach Gentzer, 1030, The Voice.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
Life isn't about money, but how you handle money impacts everything. The Ramsey Show, today at 1 on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back Tucson and all of Southern Arizona here on Tipping Point on 1030 The Voice. I'm your host, Zach Gentzer. This segment is sponsored by Little Love Burger, opening downtown last year, October 20th. A few doors down from the Rialto Theater, Little Love Burger serving up the juiciest burgers, loaded hot dogs, have ice cream milkshakes, local brews, and breakfast sandwiches. Follow them on social media at Little Love Burger. And here's a new addition to all of this. When you go, mention that you heard about them on Tipping Point for 15% off your bill. That's right. They make the rules. I don't, but I'm here to tell you about it. Make sure that you tell them that you heard about them on this program for a percentage off your bill. We're with Alma Hernandez, state legislature representative down here in southern Arizona, the now almost old LD3, now going to be LD20. Alma, a couple of things as we wrap up a state legislative session forecast. You mentioned what you think are going to be driving issues. A few that I've heard that weren't yet mentioned that I think are going to be top of mind for people is housing, education funding, and potentially more tax reform being proposed on the table. What do you think of those three? Are they going to be more front and center than maybe years before?
I'm also hearing that as well, but again, I haven't seen anything in writing yet. We hear a lot of rumors and a lot of things that might be coming, and then when it comes down to actually seeing these, sometimes they'd never make it. So I haven't seen anything written out just yet. Housing will continue, I'm sure you know, to be an issue, not only for Arizona, but, you know, around the country. Affordable housing is going to continue being one of the topics of discussion at the Capitol, as it should be. I think it's no secret that, you know, we are lacking in affordable housing options, not only in Southern Arizona, but also throughout the state. So, yes, that is definitely not an issue that anyone has forgotten about. It's just something we discuss every year. And I'm pretty sure that it's going to, again, come up this year, already hearing about some potential ideas with that. So, that and also tackling some of our homelessness issues here in Arizona. We're hearing a lot from constituents and groups that we're seeing a larger population of homeless that are now, you know, living on the streets, and we want to see what we can do to help them so that they're not on the streets. And I think that's going to be, on top of affordable housing, another conversation of topic. I know that there's been a committee that was formed recently to tackle this. A subcommittee that was formed around this issue. So definitely housing. When it comes to tax reform, again, it's another issue that comes up every year. We talk about taxes and different ideas that some members have on how to deal with that. So I'm pretty sure that will come up again. And you said education funding. You know, education funding will always be a topic of conversation. I think unless we are ever able to get back to where we were in 2008 funding levels, I don't think we're ever going to stop hearing that we need to continue funding education, and I agree. I do think that education, you know, is very important, and it should be a priority in our state if we want to attract, you know, businesses, and we want to ensure that we can provide the workforce, and we need to educate the communities, and that's a big part of it is providing education funding. So those issues, of course, will come up among other issues. we're going to see some interesting things this year, I'm sure. But again, I hope that we can stick to the big priorities, the big picture, and ensure that we can, you know, deliver, because, you know, members that aren't coming back, and we have new members who will only be here maybe one term. So I'm hoping that we can do the best that we can with the time that we have this upcoming session.
Alma Hernandez is with us. Alma, just a quick follow-up on education, because this is a question I'm asking. I think almost everybody on this topic is such a huge percentage of the state budget today is taken with education funding. Am I hearing you saying that the first step at least would be to restore pre-2008 state budget education funding? Is that my question is how much is enough, and when do we know it's enough, if not what it is today?
Yeah, so of course, you know, there has been money, but I'm not saying that we've completely stopped putting money into education, but I think it is, you know, it's not a secret that we, for over the years, have continued to cut the budget for education. And although we have restored some of it, we are not at the level that we should be, and we're not at the level that, you know, there's so many different states that are doing so well on education who really, truly fund their education system, and I don't have a price tag on that right now because I think things over the years change. There's different programs, there's different things that we could do to be innovative when it comes to education. But I do believe that we do need to put in more money for education. I strongly believe, you know, we should be paying our teachers a lot better. I think it's important that we're, you know, we have so many open positions in schools right now. Teachers are not willing to take on these positions. And you know, I'm a professor at ASU. I teach health policy at the College of Nursing. And I do think that we have to, you know, do better when it comes to education funding. I don't have a price tag on that, again, because things change over the years, and I think that every year it's a different number. But I do believe that we should be investing some more. You know, we spend so much money every year on incarcerating nonviolent drug offenders, putting people in prison here. we should be using more of that money to educate and more of that money to make sure that if people do want to, you know, go through a rehab program, that we have those programs available. You know, we have a great program in Tucson, the DTAP, the Drug Alternative Prevention Program here. We should be putting in more money into things like that. So, you know, again, I do believe that we've put in more money in education. I don't believe it's where it should be. And, you know, that's something that we look at every year. They come up with different numbers through JLBC, the Joint Legislative Budget Committee. So I'm expecting to have new numbers this year. But again, I do believe that we could be doing better. There are states that are doing really well when it comes to education.
Alma Hernandez is with us this morning, state legislator from Legislative District 3, soon to be Legislative District 20. One last policy question, and then we'll cut you loose. Alma, I thank you so much for your time. Wanted to sneak you in here before the legislative session starts next week with Governor Doug Ducey's State of the State. You mentioned more jobs here in Southern Arizona. The Metro Tucson area has the worst COVID jobs recovery of any of the seven major metros in the state. Even Flagstaff, percentage-wise, is doing better. How do we create more economic opportunity down here, and certainly in your district where there's a lot of need, Alma?
Yeah. So I think one of the big things I'm hearing, whether it's from organizations and groups that are working in the construction field, we have many jobs that are open that are very, very good paying jobs when it comes to construction and building trades. And the issue that we're seeing is not a lot of people are going into those programs. And part of that is because for so many years, you know, we advocate, you know, go to the university, go to college. But there are so many trade opportunities and jobs that you can do, that you can go to a trade school. You can go to a community college and do a program, whether it's plumbing or being an electrician. There's so many different things that can be done. But I don't think over the years we've done enough to promote those programs or really educate or train that workforce to be able to fill those jobs. So we can't have more housing if we don't have enough builders. we can't create affordable housing if we can't have the workforce here that is trained properly to be able to provide those, you know, those housing projects for us. So I do think it's something that we need to look at, putting in more funding for trade programs, supporting some of the programs like JTED that are already doing this. We need to do a little more investing in those so that we can create more jobs, because I'll tell you that the main issue that I hear from a lot of these organizations and businesses here in Arizona is we don't have the workforce that is trained properly to do these jobs. So, I think there's a lot that needs to be done. I do think that there's a future when it comes to the building and those type of trades. My father was a construction worker his entire life, and I think that, you know, we're having a lot of these folks age out now, and we need to start training a younger generation to take on these jobs. And they're very good paying jobs. You know, there's a lot of companies in Arizona that have a lot of incentives and programs, but we need to have people that are properly trained to work those jobs. So I'm hoping that that's going to be a topic of conversation, you know, for the leaders in Arizona, because it's something that we do need to look at and start investing in.
With Alma Hernandez this morning. Alma, what's next for you? Are you going to continue serving in the state legislature? Is there a state Senate run in your future with redistricting? What comes next?
Yeah, you know, I sure hope so, that the members of my district will continue to elect me. As mentioned, I'm going into my fourth year, and yes, I will be running for re-election in this upcoming session. I plan on running again for the House. And, you know, I still have, what is it, two more terms to do after this one. And if I'm, you know, if I'm lucky enough to be reelected, then I will continue doing the work. And I don't have any plans set out of where I'm going to be running next or what I'm doing. I'm really focused on my job right now and what I'm doing. So I'm looking forward to this election season. It's going to be interesting because we're still dealing with COVID, but I will right. definitely be running again.
Alma Hernandez has been with us. Alma, thank you so much, and good luck in next week as the state legislative session kicks off, and do well up there for us.
Of course. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Alma Hernandez, Legislative District 3, soon LD 20. Tucson, that does it for our show today. When we come back on the program, of course, Hugh Hewitt is up next today, Bill Buckmaster at noon. When we come back tomorrow, Chad Kazmar will be with us, Tucson's new police chief here in the city of Tucson. He wants to see crime lower and homicides lower. What are his plans to do that? We'll chat with him about that and more tomorrow. Also, Hub Ice Cream is coming in. Some healthy ice cream for the new year. We'll end the week in a fun way. You can catch us on the podcast anytime. KVY.com/podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify Music. We are there. Tucson, stay safe out there. Enjoy the weather. Be safe. We'll see you tomorrow at 9 a.m. on Tipping Point. 10:30, The Voice. As always, Matt Neely, thank you for making the magic happen on the other side of the glass. We'll see you tomorrow. Stay safe out there. Listeners, thank you. You can reach me at email, zenser@gmail.com. Take care, Tucson. See you tomorrow, Friday.